Total Tuscany Podcast, episode 63.
You know, one of the guys I work with, Bernardo Bignacchi, one of the greatest winemakers on the planet. We were doing a wine tasting together and somebody asked this very question. And, you know, he said, "Madam, we consume more of the wine that I make than anybody in the world does. We drink it every day. And I don't like headaches. And I don't like hangovers. And I don't like scratchy, blotchy skin and feeling terrible. Why on earth would I create something to put into a bottle to give it to you for you to take home to feel horrible?" And it was just, when he said that, you know, I just stopped and I thought about it, and it really, you know, it sunk in. And today I tell that to people because I get this question every day.
Anthony Frevoletti's Instagram handle says all you need to know about this American now living in Tuscany. Love for wines. Call it love. Call it passion. Call it a career. Since he was a kid, Anthony has been drawn to the soil, the water, the grape, and the process of making wine. He's been living in Italy for 10 years now. He's an expert, and he's still learning. People ask us all the time about the wine in Italy, specifically Tuscany. Get ready to find out all you need to know. Welcome back to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined once again by Pat Capagna. Pat, we've been busy with these podcasts lately, haven't we?
We are knocking them out.
We're back in the content producing machine. And I tell you what, everybody that we talk to is so passionate about Tuscany and passionate about delivering what's great about Tuscany to their clients or just a tourist. And I would say that today is no exception. We met Anthony Frevoletti about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, on one of our Total Tuscany experiences. And he was so passionate that day. I've been trying to really line him up for a podcast. It's taken this long, but it's well worth the wait.
Yeah. We learned an awful lot that first day. It was really interesting watching our guests interact. They just came off the plane, and he was one of the first Italians that they met.
And he's an American Italian who grew up in the United States, is transplanted, has a wife, has a child. They live outside of Florence. He's lived in different regions of Tuscany, starting with Montalcino up to Rada and Chianti. Now he's just right by Florence. But and one of the most common questions we get asked about Tuscany is wine. Is the wine very good? Well, you're about to find out how good the wine is today on the Total Tuscany Podcast with Anthony Frevoletti. Anthony, the first question I have is, how does a Chicago kid end up living in Italy the past 10 years and peddling wine? Because that sounds like the dream job.
Well, it's not always as luxurious as it sounds, but as a kid, I was growing up around grapes, and my father used to grow grapes and make wine as a kind of passionate hobby. And every summer was spent in the dirt and growing grapes. And then, I got a little older. My stepfather had a small, wine collection, but his collection was pretty much built in the 50s and the 60s and 70s. And so it was mainly all European wine. So I started tasting wine pretty much as a boy. And then in my teenage years, I started to kind of develop, I'd say, more of a palate. And that was all based on really European wine. And then, I got out of school and I was working in restaurants as a, busboy and a waiter and so on, and always gravitated to the wines and started to learn more about, food and wine together. I just started selling wine as a career, and I never stopped. So, here I am. I found an opportunity to come out to Tuscany back around 2008 and work on a project with a friend of mine and also my brother, who also is in the wine business. And I started working in the dirt again with these guys and working in the vineyards, and we were putting together some wine, pretty much a wine built for Americans. And once I started that, you know, I kind of got reinvigorated. My wine passion was reignited, and I started to learn things that I just never really knew before, and I thought I knew everything, but I didn't. Once that happened and I got kind of reinvigorated there, I just never stopped. We decided to stay. My wife and I decided to stay, and I had a very unexpected gift about 6 years ago with the birth of my daughter, and that was another big reason why we stayed. We wanted her to grow up in this kind of environment. Yeah,
Anthony.
And here I am.
In order to sell wine, I'm presuming you have to know an awful lot about how it's made. What's the biggest myth, whether you're in Tuscany or in south of France, what's the biggest myth that you see people holding about making wine?
Well, wine is the wine making part can be very simplistic. I think it's how you handle the wine once you've passed your fermentation and so on. And I think that, you know, there's just an approach, I think, driven by the winemaker. And I think that approach really, you know, speaks out. And then the wines can become really individual to that winemaker. And that here, a winemaker is really connected and tied to the territory, to the soils, to the land of where they've grown up and where, you know, generations, great grandfathers and so on have been doing making wine and living a farm life, if you will, and so that comes through in the wine. I think today there's so much manufacturing going on that it's hard for either a young new wine enthusiast or even some of us that are a bit older don't really understand because of the manufacturing of wine today. And so in that respect, I always gravitate to the old style, I guess you could say, and the hand being involved as opposed to the mechanic part of it today. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's funny that you actually mentioned soil, I think, twice in our first question, because what I remember about you is we met with you, you gave a great presentation on a tour that we'd taken over a couple of years ago, and I'll never forget that presentation because we just got these people off the plane. We took them to this wonderful vineyard, I believe just south of Florence, and you're like, pick up the dirt, smell the dirt, smell everything that's around. You're like, screw that stinking oak. The wine is about the soil. And doesn't that stick with you, Pat?
I mean, it really. Forget it.
Yeah. So, you know, how much does, you mentioned the soil, how much does the soil play a part in the flavor of a wine and get rid of that stinking oak, right?
Yeah. I mean, oak is a very important tool. But it needs to be used as a tool and not to become a primary aroma or a primary flavor profile of the wine. And that's where we are today. I think the oak barrel gets kind of crammed down our throat more so than ever before in the past. And when it comes to dirt, listen, it's all about what's happening underground. You know, the grapes are coming up and the vine grows above ground, but it's the story lies underground. And you approach every wine from wherever it comes from around the world. The true story of what the flavor, what the aroma, what the place, the territory, it's all from underground. And Tuscany is just such a diverse place underground. What we can't see. And so, you know, today we're going to ask you, can you pick up on this aroma and can you taste this fruit or something? And so we're so focused on that part of it that we don't really make the connection to how these flavors and aromas are coming through in the wine. And when I mentioned, you know, having the personal touch of a winemaker that, and, or grape grower that's connected to the soil, that's, you know, they're trying to pull underground out and put it into your bottle. And Tuscany represents, to me, one of the most diverse growing regions in the world. There's so much happening underground. You guys might remember, you know, I was kind of pushing toward speaking of the forest and the incredible network of fungus that is going on underneath our feet. And it's the fungus that tells the story. It's the fungus that carries the aromas and flavors into your wine. Without that bed of fungus, and Tuscany's got such a rich fungus. Well, you know about truffle, the white and black truffle. You know, it's part of that underground network, and that's what I want to get people to wrap their heads around. Because when you start getting, you know, understanding that part of it, you start to understand the aroma and flavor and stop trying to look for it while you're drinking the wine as it's crossing your tongue. It's most of the time it's not there. And then we just get confused. And then we're just like, well, you know, well, either I like it or I don't. And how much is it? And, you know, you're missing the whole story. And I think that's kind of what, you know, my mission is to change the way people think of the flavors and aromas and how they've gotten into the wine. And once I can make that connection for them, I can then start, you know, showing them a better way to taste wine. And once they understand those two components, it's going to help them buy wine and buy the right wine for them. Yeah. And I think, you know, here in the later parts of my career, I think that's really my main focus today, is to, you know, change the way you approach it, change the way you taste it, and let's start changing the way that we're buying it. I think, 90% of wine in America that's purchased is consumed on the same day. And that's a pretty staggering amount when you stop to think about it.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, we all are. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because when Pat and I have been to Tuscany, we'll find a little place where we can go just fill up the bottle right there and fill it yourself. Are there wines in Tuscany that you're like your everyday wine, and then and wine you just set aside for special occasions?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are some wines that are the winemaker will be designing the wine for the future, and so tasting them right at the very beginning, right when they're just released, isn't really fair to the wine, not fair to the winemaker really, and it's not fair to you because you're not really tasting everything that wine is going to offer you. However, you know, there's other winemakers that are not trying to, create wines for your everyday, are trying to create wines for your everyday drinking. They're not, although they can age and although they're perfect to put in the cellar, but they're not making the wine so complex. I have a guy right down the road from me. He's completely organic growth. He doesn't add any of the fillers in the wine during the winemaking process, and the wine is just so delicious that it's that type of where you finish the bottle before you even realize that oh my gosh, I have to open another bottle because we finished it. And they're just refreshing and delicious, and in their youth. But some of the other wines that I work with are really driven for the long term. So you can find them all over the place here. And they don't have to be, loaded with chemicals in the farm. And they don't have to be added fillers of coloring agents and aroma agents and taste fillers and so on. And then, of course, the preservatives and everything else that goes into it these days. So there is that simple wine out here, and they're delicious. You know, I've tasted several, if not, you know, let's just say thousands of bad wines. So you could be very pleasantly surprised when you do find something that I can pull the cork on. I don't have to take a hammer to my wallet, and everybody enjoys them, and they're just refreshing and delicious and so on. So I like to have that cross. I always like to have wine in the house that I can pull a cork on and not feel guilty, that I might have unexpected friends pop over and I can pull the cork and we can jump right in there without decanting and breathing for, you know, half a day. But then, as you said, there's other wines, and those are special occasion wines and wines that I try not to drink, so quickly. And they're just two different worlds, but I think they speak of Tuscany, and they speak of the cuisine of Tuscany, and so yeah, there's certainly that kind of wine all around me, yeah, and it's really a pleasure to have them.
You know, Tony, is do most of, in your experience, do most of the Tuscans, the true Tuscans, do they buy their wine in the co-op in the grocery stores, or are they still going out to the vineyards and to the wineries and buying locally?
Yeah, I think that in each little village, each little, you know, town and so on, here, especially in Tuscany, we're in the farmland here. And so growing up here, I think they all have connections to different wineries, cheese farms, dairy farms, and butchers and so on, bakers. And so I think they primarily go to their friends and places that they've grown up around to have their wines or buy their wines. And then, of course, you know, there's convenience. So, you know, that's universal, right? We go to the grocery store because I don't want to take the 20-minute drive out into the country to go hit the winery and then spend 45 minutes walking around and trying to buy and wait for other people in line and all that kind of thing. So we just go to the store. And our grocery stores here do have a lot of the local favorites. So local stores, even though they might be owned by a bigger kind of corporate entity, they still can shop locally. So we have we're pretty lucky in that respect that if you do have to go to the store, you can still find some local product. Yeah.
So you've lived in Montalcino, you've lived in Rada and Chianti, now you're living near Florence. You mentioned the vast different soils and landscapes of Tuscany. Is there any particular grape, region, wine, Brunello, Chianti, that you, or the famed Super Tuscan, I know you love that term, that you like the best?
Well, you know, I think if we're talking territorial, I would say the Southern Chianti Classico zone is certainly one of my favorites. And you know, I'm not such a big fan getting further north. Yeah, for favorites, I would say Montalcino and the Southern Chianti Classico zone for here where I'm at. Everybody can make a Tuscan wine, so there's plenty of Tuscan. I don't have to go out to the little territory of Bulgari just to find a, let's call, Super Tuscan. So I can find good Tuscan wines all over the place. But you know, when you get into Montalcino, when you, for instance, Chianti Classico, you know, there's several different districts of Chianti Classico, the Rada and Chianti, and Gaioli and Chianti, and Castellina and Chianti, and Greve and Chianti, and these are little districts. And I prefer further south in the Rada, Gaioli areas, Castellina and Chianti. And when it comes to Montalcino, here again, it's one place. Yeah, it's one yep. territory, but it's vastly different from north to south, east to west, from the top of the mountain to the middle of the hill, down into the valley floors. And so I think for me, myself personally, I love Montalcino. I love being up closer to the tops of the hills in the forest. I love Southern Chianti zones, Chianti Classico zones, because of the forest influence. And, you know, I'm a fungus guy, yeah? And I love my forest because the forest gives me underground root system, which is just basically a universe of fungi. And there's my flavor and my aroma. So, but as far as a favorite, I can never say that I have one favorite wine. I love all wine, no matter where in the world it comes from. I don't love all wines, but I love all wine. Yeah. And so I think for me, yeah, I can't pick one to be a favorite over the other. But if I'm choosing in Tuscany, I'm going to drink Brunello, and I'm going to probably drink Southern Chianti Classico more so than I drink anything else.
Anthony, you're an ambassador for wine. And that's the way when we met, that's came to my mind, is you bring it something very complex and you make it simple so that somebody like me can understand. Podcast listener, they're listening to our stuff, trying to figure out what they like, what they don't like. Should they go to Tuscany? I want you to, for just a moment, I want you to tell that listener why they should come to Tuscany and why they should sample some wine. They've never been to Italy before.
Well, let me say that Tuscany certainly is one of the most beautiful places in the world, certainly one of the most beautiful wine regions in the entire world. So certainly you need to come to Tuscany just to absorb its just beauty and its tranquility. And of course, it's cuisine, of course. And so why you should come and taste wine here, because there's an authenticity to wine here that I think is more pronounced here than in any other place in the world, really. And the authenticity of, you know, some of these farmers. And the only way really to understand wine, and the only way to really maybe find a passion for wine, is to be able to certainly taste and experiment and experience all wines from all over the world. But here it's so important because it's almost in some ways the modern birthplace. And when I say modern, I mean going back 1,500 years. The world of wine and the history of wine goes back thousands of years. So, but here we can have a real connection to it, and we can still connect with what wine really was and what wine really is. You know, we only hear about these famous Bordeaux that had sold in an auction for thousands of dollars, and we all sit around there and we imagine, you know, these stories and so on, and that's not, you know, the reality. The reality is coming closer to nature, getting your hands dirty in there, and really understanding where wine came from. And I think that's where passion really can start to take hold. You know, it was, for me, it was having this direct connection to history and having a direct connection to what wine used to be. The famous wines we read about from the late 1800s and late 1700s. And then, you know, as that followed through into more of a modern age, let's say post-World War II, you know, those wines became, you know, something of a dream or a fantasy. And I think for me and as American, who started, you know, working in wine as early in my life, you know, that was really fascinating to me. And so I, you know, went on a mission to taste everything and anything from all over the world, and never really sunk in until I started to drink old world Italian, some of the old world French and Spanish wines. And then all of a sudden you can start to taste why those wines were so legendary. And then you start to build this connection slowly over time. And then once you're in it, you know, it's a one-way street. You're not turning back. So you need to come to Tuscany because you need to experience what's happening underground. You need to experience a true artful way and a respectful way to farming. And how, you know, that translates into a wine. I often say, you know, this wine has great energy. And I think that throws people, they kind of tilt their head and look at me like, you know, what? There's an energy that can be found in these wines. And it's not something that you go to look for. But the more you're tasting and the more you have a connection with everything that's around that particular wine, its territory, its birthplace, and so on, that winemaker's individuality, the hand of the winemaker, the passion of the winemaker starts to come through and you feel an energy. And man, you're hooked. There's no turning back, I think. And you add that with this absolutely stunning landscape, and, you know, you're done, I think.
You know, like most things in Tuscany, the great things we find usually are by accident or weren't planned. When we first met you, we didn't know we were going to meet you. Anna Mondafferi from Cool Tours brought us to a vineyard. You were there presenting. So can people hire you? You're a consultant, is the best word to put it. But can people, who, if they're going to do a tour, if they're going to go to Tuscany, can they hire you direct? How do they find you? How do they meet up with you and hear about your passion firsthand for wine?
Well, I think, you know, I'm pretty accessible as far as, you know, my email accounts, everything's built around the love for wine. So it's, you know, it's Anthony dot love for wine and at gmail.com. And I would hope that everybody who's coming here would please, you know, look for me, because there's so much I need to show and so much I need to tell. And then, of course, I'm on Instagram at Love for Wines. And then that one has got the S on the end of the word wine. So it's Love for Wines on Instagram. And I'm on Facebook. So I'm easy to find there as well. You can either just type in my name, Anthony Frevoletti, or Love for Wine. And then, you know, the website, of course, I get a lot of people sending me requests through there. And so I think I'm easy. I'm on YouTube. I do some tasting videos there on a YouTube channel, which needs to be updated. I'm working on that now, but there's plenty of great videos on there. And there's a message here, and it's not just for me to sell people wine. You guys might remember when you were here, I tell you, I don't care if you buy wine. Please don't feel obligated to come here and like, oh, we're going to go on this thing, we have to buy this guy's wine. I don't care about that. My main goal is creating the connection and to get people to understand what makes, you know, the wine special, what makes it flavorful, and it's just such layers, starting from deep underground all the way up through the vine, out of the grape, into the winemaker's hand, finally into the bottle and on your table. And why it's so important to have these. I don't want people drinking good wine. I want them drinking great wine. That does not mean that when you come here and I take you to a wine vineyard or a wine tasting, that you're going to love the wine. You know, I don't know what you're drinking at home, but I want you to understand it. So in that respect, everybody needs to come with me and to allow me, you know, the 2 hours of their time, or sometimes I can take you a lot longer, but, you know, on average, to let me take you on that journey. And I promise that, you know, you'll never see wine the same way again. You'll never taste wine the same way again. And you'll finally, for most of us, finally have a connection to it and finally start to understand more. I mean, every day, Travis, I have people in here that are coming and they don't get it. And they don't get it because it's the way they've been spoken to and the tastings that they've gone on. I think a great example is Red and Black Courant. you know, 9 out of 10 people have never tasted a black Corona, don't even know if they did, and they wouldn't even recognize it if they saw it. But yet, it happens to be the number one descriptor in wine and or flavor for wine. And I want to break all that down. I want to peel back this onion for them. You might not, you know, choose me as your wine shopper for the rest of your life or something, but at least I'm going to change the way that you do, you know, approach wine, and that you do buy wine and you do taste wine. That's the biggest part. We don't understand how to taste well. And so we just, you know, we kind of give up and we just go, well, do I like it or do I not? And so I can make anything taste good. Yeah. I mean, we see that in your grocery store every day.
Mogan David, you know, doesn't taste good.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll give you that. But that Mogan David was on my table when I was a kid, let me tell you. So my brother and I used to sneak him out of the Thanksgiving dinner after everybody was cleaning, doing the dishes. And, you know, so, but yeah, there's a way to make things taste good. And so that doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you. It doesn't necessarily mean that you know, that's what you should be buying. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Let's say, you know, a nacho cheese flavored tortilla chip is nacho cheese flavor. It's got nothing to do with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I want to really, really have an opportunity. And that's why I stay and I do what I'm doing here. Listen, I could be, I could have a much healthier income level if I was back home, of course, but it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. My daughter, you know, my family, my wine, my food, that is takes center stage for me today. And so while I'm here, I want to grab every single one of you and grab every person I possibly can. And that doesn't just mean Americans flying over here. Yeah. I have people that I don't even speak their language, and they come to me once a year to buy wine. We can't even really communicate with each other, but I can communicate through facial expressions and body language and certain words that I might know, and they follow me. And these are Europeans that have been coming here for years to buy wine, and now they come to me because I made that connection for them. And there's a trust in there, I think, that's really vital as well. You know that if you are going to come to a tasting with Anthony or buy wine from an Anthony selection, let's say, you know that, man, it's just pure wine. It's respected soil. It's respect to the fruit itself. It's respect and love during the grape pressing and the wine production. Clean wine. There's no, I won't stand for any of the additives and any of those things. And I don't want everybody else to just, you know, give up and go to the store and grab one of those, you know, Mogan David types, or and I'm using that word, but I think you know what I mean. It's not necessary if we just can make that connection, and I'm trying to do it every day. Yeah,
Anthony, it's funny you talked about peeling that onion back. Is there a favorite story you could relate to the listeners here, where you've exposed someone or some group to this authenticity, to this way of making wine that stuck with you?
Wow, there's been, you know, so many, I think, that I would say, without, you know, mentioning, you know, names that are recognizable, that I have had, you know, plenty of somewhat famous winemakers here, and that have gone through, you know, tours with me and tastings and so on. And today I get letters, you know, and emails, I should say. No one sends letters anymore, but I get emails today, you know, and them expressing to me how they've changed their whole approach into their soil maintenance and their soil management, and how in the beginning, a couple of years ago, when they first started to make the changes, that It affected them financially. It affected them for their customers because things changed somewhat, and the flavor core of the wines changed, and how they're using their barrels and how they're understanding it, how to use their barrels changed for them. And at first it was difficult, but I get, you know, yearly reports from quite a few, and today their customers have been able to transition with them and understood what they were doing and understood. And they said the same thing that I said to you earlier. You get reinvigorated. Not every vineyard owner, particularly in the New World areas, you know, started off in the wine business. They just loved drinking wine and then got to a level of success in their personal lives and decided, hey man, I'm gonna go make wine, and I'm gonna, you know, you've all heard those stories. I'm chucking everything to the wind and we're gonna go buy a vineyard. And then they get in there and they're so influenced by the stylistically what's happening in the world of wine today and how it financially makes sense to make wine in a modern manufacturing way. There's you know, there's dollars and cents tied into that process, and how it's changed them, and it's how it's changed their client base that comes to their vineyards, and it's so, you know, I know it doesn't, you know, I'm not changing the world, you know, I didn't come up with a new medicine or anything or a new cure for any kind of disease, but you know, it's flattering, I guess, when I hear these stories coming back to me about how I was able to make a change with somebody I never even really met. I met the vineyard owners and I met the winemakers. Sometimes I didn't even know that they were vineyard owners. Not everybody tells me who they are. Like you guys, you roll out of the van and I'm right on top of you. You know, let's go, man. We're going to go rip apart some herbs and put your hands in the dirt and, you know. And so I didn't even know. And so I think that to me is really special. I can't tell you how many times I get an email that says, you know, Anthony, you were the highlight of my trip to Italy and to Tuscany, and we did the Amalfi Coast, and we you know, were in Cinque Terre, and we did all these great wonderful things and saw great art, and yet they chose my 2-hour or 3-hour time they spent with me as the highlight of their trip is really, it's something special to me. And now you can't come into my, you know, into a winery that I'm working at or working with, and I'm not going to give that to you no matter what, whether you're buying wine, not buying wine, if you're a wine drinker, not a wine drinker. And I think those are the special moments I have, honeymooners telling me they'll never forget their honeymoon because of my wine tasting.
Well, that shouldn't be. You know that, right? I mean, if they're honeymooning, they don't forget you. That's how come? Serious question. I've never been drunk or had a hangover on Italian and Tuscan wine. Is that because no preservatives, no sulfates, all that stuff?
Well, you know, when it comes to sulfite, yes, by the way, the answer to your question is yes. But you mentioned sulfite, and it's just something I got to touch on. And, you know, sulfite is in every plant life.
Okay.
And sulfite is a natural preservative for plant life. And it does come out into the wine as a tiny result of fermentation. So there's sulfite in all wine. You can make a sulfite free wine by putting the wine through a process to eliminate any sulfite. And then, you know, you don't, there's additive sulfite. We have a, let's call it an artificial type sulfite that we can add into the wine at, you know, right before bottling to preserve the wine and so on. That is the sulfites in everything. It's in all the wine. So people can't be afraid of, you know, sulfites. And we immediately point to the sulfite as the culprit, just like maybe MSG, if you remember in Chinese food back in America, everybody stopped going to Chinese restaurants because they were adding MSG at the end of the night out of a tub into their food to preserve it for the, you know, for the week. There's MSG in everything. I mean, you go to the grocery store today and you know, it's in all of your food. So it wasn't really the culprit. It was the way it was being used that was giving people reactions. You're not going to go to the hospital because somebody, you know, put too much sulfite in their wine or added, you know, some kind of a preservative with that respect. The artificial stuff and the artificial preservatives that are going into wine, now that's a different story. And the chemicals, you know, listen, let me put it to you this way. The chemicals and the enhancers, the flavor enhancers, all that type of stuff, absolutely we're having reactions to it. My sister gets big red blotches all over her face and her arms and her neck when she drinks red wine. The headaches, the feeling like crap before you go to bed, and even worse in the morning when you wake up. That doesn't happen to you here, does it?
No.
No, and it's amazing, and you're almost encouraged to drink more, you know.
Absolutely.
But there is a lot to what goes into wine that we don't see or know about. And then there's things like, confidentiality contracts that if you go to work for some of these big wineries, they make you sign them because you're not supposed to know what the enologist is how he's fixing the wine in a laboratory. But 14% of the bottle of wine I'm drinking right now is alcohol. The other 86% is water. And we need to start examining what's in the water. So if I'm, and I don't care if it's drip irrigation or if I'm, you know, watering the vines with, you know, irrigating and all that. But that water is taking with it, as it works itself into the ground and eventually into the root system of the plant, it's taking with it the huge amount of herbicide that's being sprayed into our vineyards today, the pesticides to keep all the insects off. And then because we're watering, we get black mold, a fungus that grows over the grapes and can kill your grape. You can't use it, so we use antifungal. And then we're using, you know, artificial fertilization. And then when you're putting the water on it, that's, the water's collecting all of that. And it's going into the ground, and then it's eventually being absorbed by the root system, and it's coming out in your fruit. That's a big issue. And then once that happens, you get into the winery, and then they're starting to add all these other types of, you know, artificial preservatives and all these different, you know, types of you know, there's clay additives you can put in the wine to soften it. There's just so much garbage going into the wine today. And that's what's really we're having reactions to, and why we're getting these headaches. And you know, one of the guys I work with, Bernardo Bignacchi's, one of the greatest winemakers on the planet, and I've met winemakers and worked with them from all over the world, and this guy stands out to me as one of the best, and is the most humble guy you'd ever meet. But, you know, we were doing a wine tasting together, and somebody asked this very question, and, you know, he said, "Madam, you know, we consume more of the wine that I make than anybody in the world does. We drink it every day, and I don't like headaches. I don't like hangovers, and I don't like scratchy, blotchy skin and feeling terrible. Why on earth would I create something to put into a bottle to give it to you for you to take home to feel horrible?" And it was just when he said that, you know, I just stopped and I thought about it, and it really, you know, it sunk in. And today I tell that to people because I get this question every day, and that's what it is. It's the water, man. You know, here, I think you guys remember, I'm talking about minerality in the Tuscan soil, yeah? We have all these enormous different types of rock and stone. In fact, you know, Italy is a big mountainous country. And so it's rock and stone, but it's a decaying rock and stone in these higher peak and elevations. So the root systems have to dig through that stones and the rocks and break through it to chase the water that's being drained by the rock and stone. Yeah, so the natural rainfall and snowmelt builds up in our aquifer, and so our root systems are digging deep and strong, and they're very aggressive, and they get down into that aquifer. And the aquifer happens to be all limestone, so there's a whole other, you know, minerality core, and that water is sitting in all of those marine deposits, you know, seashells. I just found a shark's tooth out of a vineyard in Certaldo. You know, it's 5 million years old. Yeah. So the marine deposit, all the different rocks, and the water sits in that. So that, what do you think the water is going to taste like when it finally reaches into the aquifer and the vine roots are absorbing? It tastes like mineral water, just pure, clean, you know, mineral water. And so Tuscany's identity of Tuscan wine is really wrapped up in its minerality. And so, you know, Pisa, the salt mines, the mineral mines here in Pisa, is a perfect example. The salt that goes on the prosciutto, that when it's aging for 18 months, I get those flavors out of the wine because of the water. And then that fungus we're talking about that's made up of all of the decay of a forest, where the porcini mushroom will grow out of the top layers and the truffles growing in the bottom underground, and all of the rosemary and the sage and thyme and the, you know, wild fruits, the pomegranate and apples and black cherry, yellow cherry, raspberry, blackberry, all those things are sitting in that water decaying as well. So, you know, there's the core. That's the flavor of your wine. You know, that's it. It's a mineral water, and it's the essence of a forest. And there's your Tuscan wine, and why I'm always preaching forest, forest, forest. So, yeah, that's it. That's all the elements should be. If I slice up a lime, a lemon, and I drop some lemon slices in a nice cool glass of water, you're going to have refreshing lemon flavored water, right? Just apply that concept to the ground and to what's going on in the ground. And so, yeah, that's a big message I preach. And it doesn't have to be expensive. We immediately think that it's going to be so costly that we can't afford to drink real, you know, clean wine, organically grown grapes, or, you know, clean wine production, because it's going to be so expensive. It's not true. That little wine I was telling you about earlier, he's like, you know, €12 a bottle. And it's just pure, clean, beautiful, delicious wine. And there's some, of course, that get pricey, but, you know, that's what it's all about for me, is just clean, pure, beautiful food, and Tuscan wine. My daughter, of course, yeah. That's my life.
So, Tony, is there a difference between the wine I can buy at the vineyard or have shipped directly to me from the vineyard, and the Tuscan wine that I can buy at a grocery store shelf in the States? Is there a difference between what's added to those same labeled wines?
Well, yes and no. I think that there are certainly some wines around here that are clean, and you can buy them directly from the winery, and the winery will ship them straight from their cantina or their cellar, you know, straight out to your door. Nothing's going to be added to that wine. I think that there is some importers that are going to come here and buy small, like I do. You know, I buy small amounts of several different wines. I buy small amounts because, you know, I'm not allowed to buy huge because they don't make enough. But there is a lot of importers that are coming in. I think Neil Rosenthal is one of the best importers in this respect, but they're going to come in and buy small batches and small amounts and be able to take it back. And it's not going to go everywhere, man. You're not going to, you know, it'll hit the New York City, but, you know, Omaha is not going to get it. Yeah. Because there's not enough. So, in that respect, we can start maybe shopping online and start to buy directly from certain retailers that are working with either my wine or they're working with Neil Rosenthal wine or something. And then you can access it that way, and we can ship it out to you and not have to have anything added to the wine. However, that being said, there is many big brand names, and these companies are supplying the world. So if I'm going to have a simple white, maybe say Pinot Grigio that's going to travel from Italy and land in America and then get distributed all throughout every 48 states of America and sit in warehouses, distribution centers for your grocery stores, and then it's going to pass America, and it's going to go over to Australia, and they're going to be in China, and they're going to be, all over the world. And it's just a simple white wine that was never really intended or made to go all over the world. So we have to stabilize those wines, and you have to, dump a lot of preservatives in this. It's impossible for that simple little white wine to get shipped all over the world and sit in big, huge distribution centers in the heat, and then make it out to your grocery store, and you take it home, throw it in the fridge, and then a couple hours later, it's nice and crispy, and oh boy, I got this, great Pinot Grigio. It's impossible, especially naturally made wines. They are subject to a little bit more care. You have to take care of them. And you have to nurture them, just like, I always give the analogy with my kid, had to take her home from the hospital and, give her a safe place to live and make sure she wasn't too hot and she's not too cold and give her the right environment to grow up in. And it's the same with natural wines. And on the other side, there's cocktail beverage and that stuff is loaded. You got to look for it. You got to send me an email. I'll direct you in the right place. Yeah, that'd be the easiest.
It's funny. I've been begging you to do this podcast for probably the last year. We've been playing tag back and forth, and I'll say this: it took way too long. And I will also add that this can't be our last one. I mean, you and I and Pat could probably have another hour and a half long conversation. So
Absolutely. Let's
maybe the next 6 months or so reconnect, talk about what's coming up, and keep the conversation going. Because every time, people when they consult with us, they're like, okay, I want to see art and I want to see wine. And to me, they're universal, right? I mean, art, yes. Wine is art. And I think you've done a brilliant job of describing that. Anthony, we appreciate your time today. You've been fantastic. Your passion is infectious. And now I'm going to go drink a bottle myself.
And we love to learn. This is amazing. We learned a lot.
We did. I mean, I hope the listeners do too. We'll have all the links on our website as well as your email. So, Anthony, thanks so much for joining us, and let's do it again soon.
Hey, thank you guys so very much. And I hope we connect when you guys come back this time. Yeah. And anytime, maybe we set up a harvest report.
I like that.
The 2019 harvest report.
Let's do that. So now you're probably asking yourself, how do I get a hold of some of this wine that Anthony is talking about? Chianti ChiantiServicesImports.com. That's ChiantiServicesImports.com. Check out the link right here on the page, and you'll be able to link up to it right there, because you can buy some of these very wines at a very reasonable price that Anthony is talking about.
Yeah, it's just, we are, the wine is off the charts, and as he was describing, it's the scenery, it's the people, it's obviously the food, but there is, I've only been back in the States for, 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to go back, especially after talking with him again. It's just, you cannot find that combination anywhere
else. After, you need to have your wife listen to this podcast, because to let everybody know, a little personal stuff. So we're planning our next European trip. And of course, we've always gone to Florence. We've always gone to Tuscany. And Pat's wife might be like, I might want to go somewhere else just to see more. If you listen to Anthony, I just want to be sitting with Anthony right now, smoking a cigar and drinking a Chianti Classico.
Yeah.
So tell Amy, let's go back to Florence.
It's fantastic.
I know. And if you're wondering if Anthony's passion that you heard today on the podcast is like that in real life, the answer is a resounding yes. You will not be disappointed in his infectious passion that really oozes Italian and Tuscan wine.
And his knowledge is, we haven't met anybody like
him. No, and Pat was just, we were just talking that we learned a lot today. You know, we'd met Anthony before, but today's podcast should have not only been entertaining, but should have been pretty darn educational for you. And I liked his idea of having a harvest report maybe in late September, early October to see what the future has in store for some of these wines.
Yeah. And if you're not planning your trip to Tuscany before this podcast, my guess is you're planning
it. Yeah, you should be like signing up right now. And if you need help planning that trip, reach out to Pat and myself. You can email us totaltuscany@gmail.com. That's totaltuscany@gmail.com. We'd be more than happy to sit with you, talk for a half hour or so, and we can really start you on your way to planning the ideal trip to Tuscany. Don't forget, you can always follow Total Tuscany on all the social media channels, at Total Tuscany on Twitter, Total Tuscany on Facebook, Total Tuscany on Instagram, and we like to share all our photos, our experiences, and other people's experience as well, because it is one large community, our love for Tuscany and Italy. For Mr. Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next time on the Total Tuscany Podcast.